Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today are Steve and Brittany Bingman from Tennessee. They are a couple who I met at the SMA conference last year. Steve is an administrative officer for the Department of Veteran Affairs, and he has SMA. And then Brittany, his wife, is a licensed master social worker, recently completed her degree and just got a new job. So, Steve, Brittany, so great to have you today.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, so Steve, we'll start with you. So before you talk about you and Brittany's relationship, can you talk a little about growing up with SMA and your background?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed probably about age two, so back in the early 80s. And that's when they didn't really have, you know, a whole lot of information about SMA. You know, they did the traditional leg biopsy, so I have the scar for that. And they basically said, you have SMA. Primarily, my mom just knew that I wasn't reaching certain milestones. I had an older sister, and I just basically never started walking on my own. I would always hang on to stuff. So that's how they knew that something indeed was wrong. So I grew up, I have six sisters and one brother. My brother also has SMA. It affected both boys in the family. And overall, it's obviously pretty crazy dynamic of a family, having so many kids in the house. But overall, I had a good childhood. I wasn't able to attend the local schools because they weren't accessible. But so we didn't get to go to school like with each other, all of us siblings, but me and my brother ultimately, we went to schools outside of our district, which was actually a good thing because they were better schools. So we got, a little bit better education that way. Growing up, I was always in mainstream classes, developmentally, I was very sharp and able to, keep up with my peers and even outdo them. So, great experience. Got to go on all the field trips and school clubs and all that good stuff. All the way through high school, president of a few clubs. All that, and that's pretty much growing up until I moved out when I was about 18.
And from that point, first of all, is your brother older or younger?
He's younger.
Okay, gotcha. I imagine he learned a lot from you in terms of navigating life with SMA. You're an 18. Did you go away to college with personal care assistance?
So in my family, nobody went to college. So I was on that path, following and just living life, carefree and just day to day, And then one day I woke up, I think I was about 22, and said, I've had enough, time to do something different. And I just out of the blue went to the college that day and started the process to get in school.
That's really cool. And we'll definitely talk more about that in your career. But Brittany, so can you talk a little bit about your backstory growing up? And I know also both of you contributed to the 31 Days of SMA campaign last year. So you shared a little bit about this. But what about your story before you met Steve?
Before I met Steve, I grew up with two sisters, grew up in the South in Alabama, so very close-knit family, grew up in church, and ended up getting married at the age of 19, So I was married before I met Steve, and that, didn't last very long. So going through a divorce, I knew what kind of person I didn't want to date or marry and that kind of thing. I knew I wanted something totally different. So it's pretty much before I met Steve.
Yeah. And then from that point, so Steve, like, but just backtrack for just a sec. So when you did decide to go to college and kind of start, what was kind of your career mindset at that point?
Yeah, so I just want to point out I grew up outside of Chicago, and then moved around in Illinois a little bit again, just living life and doing all that stuff. I wasn't quite sure. I knew I was kind of business minded, because I have interest in that, and I'm pretty good just with have a good business sense. So I started out at the local community college. Because I figured, okay, let's start small. Let's not go crazy right off the bat. This is a big change. I do remember my inner circle at the time. I had a few people that were like, "Oh, that's cool," but I had quite a few people that were like, "Oh, just like why?" And all this stuff. And I think for me, it was the drive that nobody in my family ever went to college or completed college, so I was pretty determined with that. And then ultimately transferred to a university, and that's what brought me down to Alabama. And from there I was majoring in accounting. And I just didn't really get a good feel for it. I wasn't confident. There were some things with some teachers. I was like, ah, this is a little bit not going, the way I want it to. So I switched to computer information systems. So I actually completed my bachelor's degree in CIS. So after that, I was ready to get to the into the work field.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And then the question for both of you, so how did you both meet? And you can each share your stories there.
The truth? Yes. So the honest truth is we met through a dating website. We lived in the same town. We were both going to the same college at that time, so it was just kind of worked out, meeting and that kind of thing.
She's being shy, Kevin. She tells a real mean story how we met.
Hey, give all the details or as much as you want to share or not. Yeah. No pressure, but I see you both smiling. So.
I will say the first night we met, I knew that he was going to be my husband. The first
Awesome.
time we met in person.
And here I am, Kevin. I'm like, yeah, I probably won't see her again, And so the whole story is that she basically, we're talking, she's messaging me, and I was doing other stuff, and I was just kind of, I guess, not playing hard to get. I guess I was just doing my own thing. And then ultimately it just worked out. We kind of realized it was inevitable. I couldn't run away anymore, roll away, that we were gonna end up together.
Well, and Steve, you said, you had these percep this perception of like, oh, I'm never going to see her again. Like, what did you have dating experiences at that point, or what was kind of your mindset
Yeah,
going?
so I'll just say I was playing the field, and I really wasn't looking for anything, real serious. Definitely wasn't looking for a wife, at the time. So it just kind of, developed.
And so that's okay. So talk about that development and how your relationship evolved from that point. So, like Brittany, you said, you knew he was the one right away, but what was for you learning kind of the world of SMA and disability, what was that process like for you?
So we talked online for a few weeks before we met, and he told me that he was like, "Hey, I just want to let you know I'm in a wheelchair." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Because I've been around people with disabilities my whole life, so it never, I was never bothered by it. And so when we met, like, I didn't feel uncomfortable around him. I didn't, you know, I was very comfortable around him. So we met in January, and I guess it was around Valentine's Day. And that next month we went on our first trip together. So it progressed very quickly.
That's awesome. And Steve, for you, so where were, in terms of personal care and independence, where were you at that point?
Yeah, so I had my own personal care, just, you know, I was living by myself, everything, you know, I had enough caregivers to get me through the day and the evening, you know, with school and, you know, all that stuff. I just want to let you know, so it was kind of interesting, because back when I graduated, the economy kind of tanked and there was no jobs. And, you know, I knew I needed to be doing something. So rather than not getting a job and, you know, just sitting there doing nothing, that's actually when I decided I need to be in school. So that's when I decided to go ahead and work on my master's at that point. So it all really just worked well. You know, with the caregivers I had, I was able to get up, get ready for school, you know, to go to class. And, you know, the school wasn't that far, so I would just roll my wheelchair. You know, the weather usually cooperated for the most part, or I could get a ride if I absolutely had to. You know, so I was able to pretty much live a pretty normal life.
That's really cool. And then so as your relationship evolved and got more serious, what were the conversations there around marriage, around caregiving, all of those things?
Well, it was kind of, so the way it happened was, I think it was in maybe the end of May or June, she had gone away. Well, I want to back up a second. So we were spending more and more time together. You know, and I was looking for excuses to keep her around, you know, during the day. Oh, well, you know, come over, we can have dinner, we'll make a good dinner for us, you know, all that stuff, or, you know, just coming up with excuses.
Yeah,
you know,
I was working full time, so I would always come by when I got off work. And I think by April, I was almost moved in with him. Like, it happened very quickly. And then beginning of June, I went on a mission trip to Honduras for a week. And during that time, like, cell phone, it was like, I think during that week, we talked maybe one time. So it was that being together for 6 months nonstop and then having like a week away from each other. So.
Yep. And that's when she came back and I had this elaborate plan to ask her to marry me.
You want to talk about your plan and what
hey,
you did?
Hey, share. Oh, this episode is going out around Valentine's Day. So go ahead. People want
so
to hear these stories.
I'll tell the story. So I was at work one day and I got flowers sent to me. And it says, will you have dinner with me tonight? And I was like, oh, that's nice. Yeah, you know, we'll go out to dinner. So I go pick him up and he has a dress. He bought me a dress to wear to dinner. So he had me an outfit picked out. And he told me, he was like, I got reservations for Texas Roadhouse. And I'm like, they don't even take reservations. What are you talking about? Like, you just go. He was like, no, I got those reservations. So because that's where we went on our first date. And he got us the exact same table that we sat at our first date. It was the Willie Nelson corner. And he had the same food that I ordered, or like the same, everything was the same as our very first date. So we had dinner. Like, I was like, okay, well, this is very sweet. Like, didn't think nothing of it. So then we left there, and there's a park that at the river that we'd always go, and like late at night we'd go like pick up fast food and just go sit at the picnic tables because it's just real peaceful sitting by the river. We went to our picnic table that we always sat at, and that's when he asked me to marry him. So
eventually,
yeah, eventually, like I was like, He just kept like stalling.
So I was very nervous.
And I was like,
it was getting dark.
Yeah. And
but the worst part was the mosquitoes.
Yeah, I was getting eaten up by mosquitoes because I had a dress on.
Yeah. So I was like, so I had this all planned out. You know, naturally with SMA, we're natural planners. You know, so we're thinking of all the details. So where am I going to put the ring where I can get it out, you know, and but yet be surprised and all this. So I had it all planned out, but I was so nervous. And then we were having fun just sitting there, you know, watching the river and, you know, it's really peaceful down there. And I was like, oh man, if I don't go ahead and do this, she's going to have welts everywhere from these mosquitoes. So that was ultimately the motivation, you know, and that's kind of how it all
happened. He was like, hey, I got something under my leg. Can you tell me to fix his pants or something? And so when I felt there, I felt the ring box. And
that has all the makings of a rom-com. I love it. That's perfect. I love it. That's great. Well, okay. Well, I love that story. If listeners need any romantic tips, go to Steve. I love it. And then, so one of the things we were talking about this right before recording and talking about the conference. So a lot couples in the SMA and other disability communities have different perspectives when it comes to spouses and partners being the caregiver or not, or something in between. So what was that process for you all in determining that and how that would work out once you got married?
Yeah, so it was a change. I will say, so basically how things even progressed faster was, you know, all of a sudden I was offered a job in Nashville.
In July.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, June, July, all fast moving. And it was a great opportunity to get my career started. You know, yes, I was still in school, but I was patient and finally got the call. And it basically, you know, I said, look, I'm going, you know. So, yes, we're engaged, but you know, I was like, really, the job was super important at that time. And I just, such a great opportunity. So I said, look, you can come with. We basically live together anyways, you know. And so ultimately we did that and moved to Nashville with about a 3-day notice.
Yeah, we just up and moved, had nowhere to live, lived in a hotel for about 3 weeks, just hotel to hotel. Until we found a place.
Yep. And so as far as the caregiving goes, you know, she was around a lot. So there were certain things, you know, just naturally that she would do. But I would say that's when we kind of shifted, you know, and she took kind of over full time, you know, because we didn't even have a place to live. You know, we were staying in extended stays and trying to learn the area after work and, you know, trying to figure, okay, is this a good place to stay or not? So that took a little while.
And Brittany, what was that process for you like of, you know, the sudden move and that transition and also transitioning to a more full-time caregiving role?
I think I just naturally just started doing it. I'm a natural caregiver as it is. I love helping people. So it was nothing like, it wasn't like a huge change for me. Because, you know, living with him, you know, the past few months, it was just kind of a normal thing anyways. Because he did have times where his caregiver didn't show up. So I would step up and do things. And so just, you know, with the move itself, because when we moved, I had never driven on the interstate. So I was a lot of first things went on with our quick move. So while he was at work during the day, I was out learning the city and trying to find apartments and things like that. Because I'd call apartments, or, you know, see if they're accessible. They're like, oh, yeah, come and look at them. And I get there, and they're not accessible. Like, mm-hmm. I learned very quickly what his needs were and what we were going to need for him to be able to live somewhere.
Do you mind if I ask what year this was around? Because, like, I mean, not that accessibility in housing has changed drastically, but I'm sure it was more difficult back then.
Yeah, that was 2010.
Okay. So yeah. That's what I got. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And Kevin, you know, the thing is I explained to her, yes, you know, okay, so you're told it's accessible, but until you really see it, you know, because as you know, a lot of times people don't really understand what accessible is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were many times, you know, and I wouldn't get off work till, you know, 4 o'clock, and time we would get through traffic and get to these apartments, it'd be 5. So we were real limited in the evenings of our time. So, you know, and so it was kind of a waste of time, you know, and they would say, oh, we're accessible, come check, awesome. We have a lead. And then, you know, to get there and see, this definitely is not going to work.
And I think it's like people's definition of accessibility thinks in terms of, like, I mean, some think of it in terms of like people who are still partly ambulatory or,
yes.
Or, you know, have a little more of it, but they do not, understand what it means for people in our shoes who, they're, you know, non-ambulatory and power wheelchairs, that we need the space for equipment and everything else. So,
Yeah. Ultimately, we drove by this apartment complex multiple times. It was super nice. It was gated, and just we were like, well, can we afford it? Can we do this? You know, whatever. So we ultimately were like, we don't have nothing to lose at this point. So we went in there and said, yeah, we have accessible. And you know, so let us show you one. So we went and looked, and of course, roll right in from the front door. And the biggest thing was, yes, the bathroom was huge, you know, mm-hmm. big enough to get a chair in there and, you know, probably 2 or 3 wheelchairs if you had to, you know, so it checked a lot of the boxes. And then we moved pretty quick because we were tired of going from, you know, extended stay or different hotels. And keep in mind, that's back around when the Nashville flood happened.
Yeah.
So finding places.
Hotels were very limited.
Yeah. So it was tough.
That I imagine is. I mean, just like a lot of obstacles presenting. So, yeah.
Yes.
And then can you talk to you about just, you know, continuing in your marriage and then starting a family too? What that was like?
Yeah. Do you want to go ahead?
Yeah. So, it was just me and Steve for a few years.
And the dogs.
Well, this one in an apartment.
Okay.
And then we decided we're going to buy a house. I think within 2 years, we had bought our first house. And so we got some dogs just because the house was empty. And we were trying to start a family and just going through, couldn't get pregnant. So going through infertility, decided that. I did a lot of testing. I was tested. Steve was tested. It turned out neither one of us could have kids. So it was like, the doctor was like, well, you know, you could pay for IVF. And we're like, well, yeah, we could, but the chances are slim. So why don't we look into foster care? So we decided to, we did the classes and started that in January of 13 or 12, 2013.
Okay.
And by July, we had our first kids, and those are the kids that we adopted.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I was pretty flexible during that whole time. You know, I pretty much left it up to her. You know, I was fine with whatever route we wanted to go. My biggest thing was we knew, one, that's a lot of money, and two, there's a lot of kids out there who need good parents, good homes. So that was really my kind of motivation, you know.
How do you mind if I ask, how old were they when you first fostered and then before you adopted?
Yeah, so our kids that we ended up adopting were our first ever placements. So it was crazy, but you know, it just worked out that way. Overall, how many kids have we had?
So we don't foster now, but the 7 years that we did foster, we fostered 52 kids.
Wow.
So our kids, Christian and Aslan, when they moved in with us, Christian was 12 and Aslan was 5. And we adopted them when Christian was 15 and Aslan was 8.
Yep, and pretty much living with us constant, you know, just doing the whole foster parent, you know, thing with visitations and, you know, trying to make things work, because that's the ultimate goal of foster care is to reunite when you can. You know, and we were very successful with quite a few of the kids. You know, we stepped up, we worked with the birth parents and, you know, basically, hey, this is what you got to do to get your kids back. You know, and really kind of put forth that effort, because that was important to us as well. You know, we never got into fostering to really adopt.
That's really cool. And it's cool how it happened. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just kind of feel like it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then before I talk about kind of like where you guys are now. So, yeah, like I mentioned in the intro, I met you both at the CareSMA conference last year, and that was your first conference. So can you talk about that experience and kind of what got you to go and meeting other people in the SMA community?
Yeah, so I'll go first. The conference was always on my radar, you know, and for a few years we had talked about going. I think the year...
We were going to go in 2020.
Yeah, and then COVID hit, so we just were like, oh, okay, you know. So we were like, the conference is in California. We love to travel. So we decided, let's make a road trip out of it. You know, we'll tie it up into a vacation. And, you know, I didn't really have, well, expectations. I will say that I wasn't like, I guess, thinking it was going to be like that great or, you know, it's just a conference. You know, and so we had made plans to sightsee after the conference, to leave the conference and check out some other hot spots while we were on the West Coast. And I'll just say, you know, when we left the conference, I was like, man, I wish we didn't plan all these other places, because we would have totally stayed a couple extra days just to hang out with a lot of the people that we met. So I will tell you, the conference, it just really blew me away to the size of the conference, all the planning, everything that went into the conference. Totally, I could have never imagined, you know, how great the conference would be. You know, met a lot of cool people. I've kept in touch with quite a few, you know, since the conference. You know, really kind of just got really back engaged with the SMA community. You know, because I really hadn't had any of that since MDA summer camp, you know. So it's been a long time without being around folks just like me. So that was pretty much my experience.
And Brittany, what about you? I know you talked about how, you know, you did grow up with other people with disabilities, but this was, I imagine, your first exposure to, like, a large sampling of the SMA community. And what was that like for you?
Yeah, I was blown away just, you know, with everyone at the conference in general. I've met so many great people. I just like just seeing how they function life and get through life with, they don't let anything stop them. They just live life and like, they don't even have a you know, any kind of disability. They're, everyone was, like, just hearing everyone's different life stories and things that they've accomplished, like all the people that have their own businesses and everything that they do. And then just, I enjoyed talking to, like, spouses and how they do things at home and the differences. And I learned a lot just by talking to the spouses who's also caregivers, but how they have their own separate time as well, to make sure, you know, that they don't get burnt out doing that.
Definitely. I mean, that's, and yeah, I'll just say, someone who's been going to conferences a long time, it's definitely, you came at a time where it's like bigger than it's ever been before. And there are way more people and way more adults that that are going now than, you know, when I was a kid. So it's, you know, the whole trajectory of it has changed drastically. And then Steve, also the conference led to a big game changer in your life. So as we talked about right before recording, you recently acquired a Jayco robotic arm, which listeners are familiar with through hearing my experiences and writing about it in my column. But can you talk about that and, you know, how you've gotten used to this new assistive device?
Yeah, so during the conference, actually, that's when I met you, Kevin, and I saw your Jake alarm. We were sitting there at the table, and you know, just knowing about SMA, and you know, just I just knew you weren't gonna spill that Coke on me, you know, while you were picking up this robotic arm with your robotic arm. And that, like, for me, you know, and just seeing you throughout the conference, you know, how many options that gave you as far as, hey, Kevin didn't have to ask for help with that. You know, it was everything from, you know, I remember you picked up that big old sandwich, you know, handled it like no problem. You know, you were able to adjust your glasses, just a wide range of stuff. And I was like, man, that is such a game changer. You know, and I left the conference knowing I had to get one, you know. And so I started the process. It wasn't smooth at first, but you know, they had to explain to me that it could take some time and all that. Fortunately, we were able to work through the details. And yeah, I got it 2 days before Christmas.
That's awesome. And it's funny because I remember getting mine right before Christmas as well, those years ago. So it's quite a nice present to have. And yeah, and I know it's one of those things too, like you'll get more and more accustomed to it and to the and adapting. So that's yeah, it was great to hear what that my cyborg army is growing, you know.
Yes, I
I
know, and
yeah.
it's funny because remember what you said that we'll be arm wrestling at the conference.
Oh yes. It's gonna happen. I want 100%.
Yes.
And then Brittany, I wanted to talk with you about, so mentioned in the intro that you recently completed your master's degree in social work and you just got a new job. So can you talk about that transition for you and also how it's impacted your caregiving?
Yeah, so getting my master's, and then I just passed the Tennessee licensure exam through the Board of Social Work. So now I work, I'm a medical social worker at a hospital because you've got to be licensed to work in the medical field. So I just started that job last week. And due to that, I mean, it works out because Steve's office is across the street from the hospital. So it's convenient, but we've both been working from home for the past 2 years. So with Steve, since COVID, there's nobody that at Steve's office. So he's pretty much there alone all day, and I go over and at lunchtime we have lunch together. But we've decided that it's best to transition to him getting help. So we started that process last week, and we have luckily found, I think we found the right person that she's going to start this week. So he can still work from home, and she'll be here to for a few hours a day to help him.
That's awesome. And Steve, what is it like for you getting back into the world of hiring personal care assistants? I know you've done it
Oh,
in the past, but yeah.
Kevin, let me tell you. Let me tell you right from the right. So I will say that we have a lot of good SMA writers out there for ads for caregivers. So I will admit that, you know, a lot of folks share these. And so I took a few of those, tweaked them, and, you know, come up with something that's just beautifully written. I will say, you know, right away, I wasn't surprised at some of the quality candidates. And, you know, of course, everybody's interested, you know, but they really, you know, not a good fit, or, you know, it's just, it's difficult, you know. The first ad I posted, it was crickets, you know, it was crickets, nothing. I was like, okay, what am I doing wrong? Basically took the same ad, I posted it first thing in the morning, like bright and early, like 6 o'clock, and it just took off. You know, so I used social media to promote it. I kept getting likes. I was like, that's good. That means more folks are gonna see it. A lot of folks were tagging each other in it, you know, and that. It was a little tricky. Some people, you know, I could weed out, you know, pretty quickly. But ultimately, you know, the right person came along. We hit it off really well. And, you know, they've already done training and everything. So I think it's going to be a good fit. It's super important, you know, as you know, so I'm able to continue to work. And, you know, if they don't show up, then that creates a whole nother slew of issues, you know, throughout the day. So I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to be a good thing, you know. I wasn't, honestly, the caregiving side is the biggest concern, you know. Working from home for the past few years, I wasn't too concerned about going back in to the office or nobody's hardly there any given day. It was, you know, that stuff is easy when you think about in terms of finding care, you know. So yeah. But I think we're on the right track.
That's awesome. I know that's always the hardest part, is actually just getting people to apply and getting it out and figuring out the right tactics for putting the word out there. So yeah, it's like any hiring in any capacity.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think right now, you know, it's harder because of, you know, pay issues and then finding the right people and, you know, how do you get the word out to reach the right people? You know, and again, the conference kind of gave me a lot of good ideas, you know, some of the panels and, you know, some of the things that other people do. So again, I think that's a plus of the conference, being able to network with a lot of people and what works for them, what's not working, you know, so we all don't have to kind of reinvent the wheel. You know, we can go with what's working and, you know, make it easier, because it is tough to find caregivers.
Absolutely. It's definitely a job in and of itself. But yeah. And then, so we're getting wrapping up a little bit here, but, can you each talk just a little bit? I know you've talked in pieces about it, but can you just kind of walk listeners through a typical day, in your lives? So, you know, a work day, what that looks like for each of you.
So now with the new job, like, get up at 5 a.m. Because we have to be at work at 8. So in the last 3 hours time, but it's, I get up, I get ready, and then I help Steve get up and get ready. And then between, you know, doing breakfast and then making sure our daughter is good for school. And then I have to take Steve to the office. You know, with taking Steve to the office, it's, you know, me going, you know, getting out with him, he has to go to the top floor of the building. So going upstairs, making sure he's good for the day. And then having to go to work myself. So really having a plan, to make sure we get every, you know, we're both at work, you know, at on time. And it's a lot of planning that takes place just to get the day started. And then, like I said, I work, and then at lunchtime I go over and help him with lunch. So we still get that time together during, you know, at lunchtime. And then, you know, I have to go back and pick him up and then come home. And then that's when the night starts, you know, with dinner and all the household things that has to be done. My daughter has somewhere to be. We, you know, get her there because she's active in school, so she keeps us busy. So our day just flies by.
Sure.
Yeah, and the biggest thing I would say is, you know, planning as much as possible. You know, we try to keep it limited during the week where we can, take care of stuff on the weekends. You know, because you're always, as much as you plan, there's always going to be something that comes up. You know, whether it's a bus that's not running that morning, you know, oh, how does, you know, the kids get to school? You know, so we try to network where we can, and call in favors, you know, here and there. But yeah, it's just a lot of planning. And then what can we do after work to make things easier? You know, maybe it's preparing a dinner the day before, or, you know, takeout or something, you know. to kind of limit some of those things in the evening. Because one thing, we obviously she has a lot on her plate. My job's pretty stressful, to make sure that we have that time in the evening, just to relax and, just kind of take it more easy. No planning involved, that's kind of what we target.
Yeah, and another thing I want to point out, for couples is at night, like me and Steve make sure that we're on opposite ends of the house for at least an hour a night. We have our alone time. He does his thing, I do my thing. Like we try to make sure that we get our, time to ourselves to just to re, regroup for us and do what we want to do. So that's important for couples as well. Make sure you get your alone time.
That actually leads me into my final question as far as like, so, I always ask people on the show what advice they have for other people in the SMA community. And Brittany, you hit on that. So, for you guys, what advice, a two-parter, do you have for other couples out there in the SMA community? And also, Steve, for maybe anyone with SMA who has not found love yet and may have any doubts about that, what would you say to them? So, I know that's a two-parter, but however you want to tackle it.
All right. So, advice, I would say just there's obviously a lot of things physically that we can't do. So try to make up for that in other ways. So we went grocery shopping over the weekend, for example, and I surprised her and got her flowers. So that's part of it. Make fun, make things fun. So she will tell you, well, I'm getting ready in the morning. I'm usually the best sit-down comic you've ever seen, or heard. So I try, I don't have a problem cracking jokes, and that. So make it fun, find ways to make things fun. It goes by so fast that way. Doesn't make it kind of dull and mundane. And then as far as finding someone, I will tell you, Kevin, for me, it was literally just getting into a groove, So you had to keep trying, first of all, and then you find out what works and what doesn't work, Now, well, I will say this, having a disability, yes, it's a big part of who you are, but I would say that it's not the most important thing. So, I always tell people it's important to have that conversation. But there's the way I looked at it was I normally did not have that type of discussion, again, because that's, it's a part of me, but it's not who I am. So let that person really know you as a person, and get to know you and your qualities and your strengths and your weaknesses. But for me, when it came time to have that discussion, yes, well, you have a lot invested in it, in the relationship at that point, to whatever extent. But when you have that conversation and it just, they're not comfortable with it or it's not a good fit, for me, it was just accepting that, and it's like it is what it is. We weren't obviously meant to be together, and so I would just encourage people, don't make that the big focus. When you're looking for somebody, really let them know who you are as a person and focus on that. And then just be prepared if it doesn't work out. There's plenty more people out there who, having a disability is not going to bother them whatsoever, So moral of the story is, don't put all your eggs in one basket, just kind of have fun with it and go for it.
That's great. And Brittany, do you want to add anything to that? Like, especially for other of her spouses and partners, to people in the SMA community?
Yeah, just you got to figure out what works for both of you as a couple, like to keep the romance there and just be romantic. Like for example, like Steve don't have a lot of arm strength, but he'll put his arm around me and like kind of rub my back, just do little things to just show that he cares and he loves me. And you just got to figure out the little things that works for both of you, and, you know, through trial and error to see, you know, but yeah, you just, and you have to communicate. You got to, you know, say, you know, this is what I need from you. What do you need from me? Like, the communication is huge.
That's great. Well, Steve, Brittany, I want to thank you both so much for coming on today and taking your time. This is fantastic. And I know you're both on social media. People can find you. And I'll also include your links to your 31 days of SMA stories in the podcast description. But I want to thank you both for coming on. This was great.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Definitely, Kevin. I appreciate you. And I look forward to seeing you at the conference.
I will be there. I look forward to we'll be hanging out a ton for sure.
Yes.
But, awesome. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.